Welcome to Torat Imecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Leah Feinberg, and today we will be learning Parashat Bereishit. On Simchat Torah, immediately following our completion of the reading of the Torah with Parashat Vezot HaBracha, we begin the cycle again with the reading of the first section of Parashat Bereishit. Rav Shlomo Ganzfried, the author of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, in his commentary to Mishnah Brachot Perek Aleph, notes that the Torah ends with the letter Lamed and begins with a Bet, which when read together, one immediately following the other, spells out Lev, heart. This teaches us that Rachmana Liba Ba'e, Hashem desires a heartfelt connection with us, whether expressed through Tfilah, in which we pour out our hearts to Hashem, through mitzvot, performed with the proper intention, or through the study of Torah itself, through which Hashem revealed himself to the Jewish people. Thus, our intent throughout our study of Torah is to deepen our heartfelt relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Our parasha opens with the account of creation. In 6 days, God created the world and rested on the seventh. Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch explains that the 6 days of creation can be divided into two sets of three. On the first 3 days, Hashem created the environment which would successively be inhabited by the creations of the subsequent 3 days, culminating with the creation of man. While each of the 6 days of creation has a ben zug, a partner, the seventh day remains alone until the formation of the Jewish people, when the spiritual light of Shabbat receives its bearer. It is the mission of the Jewish people to exemplify awareness of God as creator and attest to his omnipresence by resting on the seventh day. While the first chapter of the parasha tells the story of creation in its totality, the second chapter offers a more nuanced description of the creation of man and woman. In Rav Soloveitchik's famous essay, The Lonely Man of Faith, he posits that the two accounts of man's creation highlight two aspects of man, the work-driven man of chapter one, whose primary focus is on technological progress, on mastering and manipulating natural resources, and the poetic man of faith, who lives with a constant awareness of his soulful connection to his divine source, as described in chapter two. It is man's mission to balance these two forces within himself, to use all of his God-given abilities in service of the Creator. In the concluding verse of the first aliyah of the parasha, which is also the concluding verse of the introductory passage of the Friday night Kiddush, the pasuk states, "Vayivarech Elokim et yom ha-shvi'i vayikadesh oto, ki vo shavat mikol melachto asher bara Elokim la'asot." Hashem blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, for on that day he rested from all of his work that God created to do. Rav Soloveitchik teaches that the infinitive la'asot, to do, which seems extraneous at the end of the verse, is in fact an imperative, teaching that man is now to carry on the work of creation, to partner with God to complete the world. The idea of man as a partner in creation can be traced to an earlier verse as well. In chapter 1, verse 26, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Chav Vav, Hashem declares, Na'ase Adam, let us make man. And many of the commentators offer explanations for the use of the plural in this verse, as it is clear from the following verse that Hashem alone created man. Vayivra Elokim et ha'adam. Hashem exclusively created man. So to whom was God speaking when he said, let us make man? And what was his intent? Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky, in an early work of his, whose name, Let Us Make Man, is inspired by this very phrase, posits that God was addressing man himself, the lump of clay whom he had just formed from the earth. And he said, let us make man. You and I together will make man. I will give you the potential, and I will assist you in the process, but the work must ultimately be your own. I can create many beings that are perfect from their incipients, but that is not my concept of man. Thus, man begins his work as God's partner by participating in his own moral development and directing his own behavior, a state of being which is completely unique in all of God's creation. Having created man and endowing him with the freedom to choose his own course of action, God placed man in Gan Eden, the Garden of Eden, and assigned him the mission Le'ovda u'lishomra, to work and preserve it. What type of work is intended here? Man had not yet sinned, and the garden was self-sustaining, irrigated by its four rivers and yielding its produce without human effort. Rav David Zvi Hoffman suggests that this is not the harsh labor that will later become man's destiny. Rather, this is work that gives expression to man's unique abilities, work that enables technological progress. Examine the plants, determine their medicinal properties, and harness those properties for the betterment of mankind, while at the same time preserving the garden from harm. Man is singularly charged with contributing to God's creation. In the garden, Adam was charged with one explicit command: eat from all the trees of the garden, with the exception of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. In the third parak of the parasha, we read of the sin of Adam and his wife, who, tempted by the instigation of the nachash, the snake, ate from the fruit of the forbidden tree and shared it with her husband, in consequence of which, having violated the one commandment with which God had charged them, they were exiled from the garden, thus setting the precedent for a cycle of sin and expulsion which has pervaded Jewish history. According to Ramban, this paradigm, sin and consequent exile, constitutes the very reason for the inclusion of the stories of Sefer Bereishit in the beginning of the Torah. In chapter 4, we read of the continued decline of the state of man, with the commission of the first murder. The two sons of Adam and Chava, Cain and Hevel, offered sacrifices to Hashem, taken from the product of their creative efforts. Cain, a farmer, brought an offering of his vegetables, while Hevel, a shepherd, offered a fatted firstborn sheep of his flock. Hashem responded favorably to the offering of Hevel, but not to that of Cain, even though it was he who had taken the creative initiative and brought the first offering to God. Chazal explained that Cain had brought the least desirable of his produce, while Hevel offered a choice sheep. Angered and depressed by the rejection of his sacrifice, Cain rose up and slew his brother in the field. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks terms this the first act of violence committed in the name of religion. He explains that when one offers a gift and that gift is rejected, he has two choices as to how to respond. If the gift was sincerely given, motivated by a desire to please the other, then one asks himself, where did I go wrong? How can I improve so that next time my gift will be accepted? On the other hand, if the giver becomes angered by the rejection of his gift, that indicates that the gift was given as a symbol of power, a desire to assert one's dominance by putting the other in his debt. If the refusal of a gift leads to anger, it shows that the original gift was not altruism, but a form of egoism. I give, therefore I rule. Rabbi Sacks explains that that is how sacrifices operated in the pagan world. Attempts to please or bribe the gods into doing one's own will, as opposed to the Torah conception of divine service, which requires humility and respect for the integrity of creation, and most importantly, reverence for human life, which bears the image of God. In Rabbi Sacks' words, the story of Cain and Hevel is the most profound commentary I know on the connection between religion and violence. Violence is the attempt to impose one's own will by force. There are only two ways of living with the guilt this involves: either, like Nietzsche, by denying God, or like Cain, by telling oneself that one is doing the will of God. Both end in tragedy. The only alternative, the Torah's alternative, is to see human life as sacred. This remains humanity's last and only hope. In the final chapter of our parasha, man continues down the slippery slope of moral decline. The Torah lists the 10 generations from Adam to Noah, beginning with Enosh, in whose generation the worship of idolatry was introduced to the world, beginning with images fashioned as concrete intermediaries representing God himself, which quickly deteriorated into the worship of idols as independent forces. man lost his sense of connection to God, leading to moral depravity so pervasive that Hashem regretted having created man and determined to destroy him. The parasha ends with a teaser. Hashem determined to destroy the world, but Noach found favor in the eyes of Hashem. May our reading of the account of creation inspire our divinely ordained creativity, that we might partner with Hashem in our creative efforts designed to serve him with humility. And may our service of God be heartfelt and sincerely motivated, that it might be accepted willingly. And may the forces of evil and destruction be defeated by those who hold life sacred and live with a sense of sacred purpose. Thank you for learning together, and I look forward to studying Sefer Bereshit together with you in the coming weeks.